How did Jeff Bezos realize you could sell anything on the internet? Why did Bill Gates create Control-Alt-Delete? How did synchronized swimming prepare Christine Lagarde for international politics? What made Bob Iger bet big on Marvel? And what inspired Diane von Furstenberg to create the wrap dress? On the David Rubenstein Show, Peer-to-Peer Conversations, I uncover the untold stories of the world's most successful leaders. Listen now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to For the Ages, a history podcast presented by the New York Historical Society and hosted by David Rubenstein. Join us as he deftly explores the rich and complex history of the United States with some of the nation's foremost historians and creative thinkers. Because history matters.
Hello, I'm David Rubenstein, and I'm pleased to be joined in conversation by two distinguished scholars of international history, Brendan Sims and Charlie Lederman. We are discussing their book, Hitler's American Gamble, Pearl Harbor and Germany's March to Global War. Professor Sims and Professor Lederman, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's set the context for this. Before December 7th, 1941, Churchill was trying very hard to get the United States to get into the war in Europe. Professor Lederman, why was the U.S. not willing to actually get into the war and really just resorted to things like lend-lease or other things that did not have American troops in Europe? Why was the U.S. and particularly President Roosevelt not willing to get actively involved in the war in Europe?
Well, I think that the main reason for this goes back to the aftermath of the First World War, the way in which that conflict was seen to have been a great mistake for the United States to have got involved into a war in Europe, that its hopes for a whole new international system to have emerged out of that conflict hadn't come to fruition. And there was a desire really to disconnect the US from European power politics. And that really is the way in which most Americans at that time saw things, probably quite similar to the way in which many Americans in the aftermath of certain events in the Middle East in recent years have come to see a full-scale land conflict in the Middle East again. That was the way in which Americans saw the possibility of again being sucked into a war in Europe. And for Franklin Roosevelt, who'd been Assistant Secretary of the Navy during that conflict, who'd served under President Woodrow Wilson, he was very conscious that the American public, if they were going to be sucked into another conflict, he would have to do so with the United Nation behind him. And that memory, the legacy of what happens to Wilson when he tries to get the League of Nations through, is always in Roosevelt's mind. At the same time, he increasingly sees Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, although more Nazi Germany as the greater threat. Throughout the late 1930s, increasingly, there's a perception that the United States will be impacted by a world in which either of those two authoritarian powers would win out. And so he is increasingly bringing the United States into a position as the arsenal of democracy and involved in an undeclared naval war in the Atlantic. And that really has brought the United States increasingly into the conflict, but that final stage to be brought in as a fully coordinated party to the conflict, to come in as a full-scale belligerent, that is a step that is very, very difficult for Roosevelt to take. And for the American public, the majority of the American people do not want to get involved in that way, even though they are overwhelmingly committed to the defeat of both Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, if necessary.
What had Churchill done to try to entice Roosevelt into the war? How much time did he spend meeting with Roosevelt before Pearl Harbor?
Yes, really, from the moment that Churchill comes into office, his letters to Franklin Roosevelt and his speeches are very much about bringing the United States into the conflict. If you look at the end of almost all of his speeches, they are being directed towards the United States, talking about the new world coming in to address the balance of the old, the importance that Churchill really sees from an early point that Britain can't win the war unless the United States comes in as a full belligerent. Publicly, he's saying that economic aid is going to be sufficient. His famous line around the time of Lend-Lease, give us the tools and we will finish the job. That's very, very good publicity for Lend-Lease. But behind the scenes, Churchill is aware that full-scale intervention is going to be necessary for Britain to win the conflict. And so we're seeing that in terms of the speeches, we're seeing it in terms of the letters. And then from the time that they come to meet in Placentia Bay, when the Atlantic Charter is put together. Churchill is then bringing that directly to Roosevelt. And so the Atlantic Charter looks forward to a world after Nazi Germany is defeated. The only problem for Churchill is that the United States is not yet a belligerent in the conflict. So this is something where Churchill is following a long-standing campaign to try and get the Americans in on the British side. But he is aware late in 1941, even as late as October, November 1941, that the American public are still hesitating and that Roosevelt is hesitating on bringing the United States in. So Churchill is facing a very difficult situation. As he puts it to one aide, the worst case situation would be for Japan to just attack Britain in 1941 and bring Britain into a two-front war with Japan and Germany with the United States out. The second worst case scenario would be a Japanese attack on the United States, but the US stays out of the European war. And then obviously, for Churchill's perspective, the possibility of getting the United States in against both belligerents is going to be what's necessary for Britain to ultimately emerge victorious in both hemispheres. Ultimately, what he would have preferred is for the United States to come in against Germany with no need for Japan to come in. But there's all these alternatives, all of these scenarios are in the minds of the participants in late 1941.
When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, was that a total surprise to the U.S.? And had some type of attack not been anticipated by the Americans?
Yes, I mean, there's very much the intelligence that's coming through is suggesting that there's a possibility of an attack. But we have to remember the level of sophistication of American intelligence is not at the level that it will be by the end of the war. So the magic decrypts, where the United States has broken Japanese codes earlier in 1941, but they're coming very much as raw, undigested cables. There's not necessarily a clear sense of where Japan will attack, when it will attack, how it will attack. And one of the most important elements is how Hitler would respond to a Japanese attack. So there is a long-standing perception among revisionists that Roosevelt is essentially angling towards bringing the United States in, that a Japanese attack is going to be used by Roosevelt to bring the United States into the conflict. We found no evidence of that at all, particularly because it has to be remembered that at this time, Roosevelt, a former Assistant Secretary of the Navy, as I mentioned, has a very deep emotional connection to the Navy, the idea that he'd be willing to sacrifice the American Navy, particularly at a time where, as he puts it himself, the US doesn't have enough Navy to go around. The idea that it will ultimately be able to fight the sort of global war that it ends up fighting, that's not by any means inevitable at this time. But also, it's not clear that if Japan attacks, that Nazi Germany will respond with a declaration of war. The intelligence is very conflicted on this. So I think, as I say, when we look back, things might look much more simple than they actually are. At the time, it's really not clear how things are going to turn out, and it's certainly not clear that a war in East Asia will necessarily inevitably lead to an American war with Nazi Germany as well.
So when the attack occurs on December the 7th, what was the immediate U.S. reaction that day or the next day? And what was Churchill's reaction and the British reaction? And was there some secret pleasure by Churchill in the fact that this would likely get the U.S. into the war finally?
Yes. Yeah, so as you said, Churchill famously would respond, as he would later put it in his memoirs, that he goes to bed after hearing the report of the Japanese attack, that he goes to bed and sleeps the sleep of the saved and thankful, essentially everything he'd been hoping for, that the United States was in the conflict now. They were in the war up to the neck and into the death. And he says, so we had won after all. But if you look at the time, the idea that Churchill knew exactly how things were going to turn out is not necessarily clear from his reaction at the time. He certainly doesn't sleep the sleep of the saved and thankful. Most everyone who sees him in the days after the Japanese attack says that he was absolutely exhausted, that he sounded drained. And the main reason for this is, if we look at those scenarios that I painted out previously, he has avoided the worst case scenario, which is that the Japanese just attack the British Empire and the Americans are kept out. So he's avoided that worst case scenario. But it's not clear that the United States is going to be brought into the war in Europe. And his main concern in the immediate aftermath is that the United States is going to direct all of its attention to Japan, to East Asia, where America had been attacked, where it was extremely vulnerable after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And it's going to leave Britain essentially unaided, other than the Soviet Union, who are very much on the back foot at this time, defending the outskirts of Moscow, that Britain will be left essentially to fight Nazi Germany unaided. And he's particularly concerned about supplies, lend-lease supplies. And so this is really brought home to him when on the night of December the 7th, 1941, the War Department in Washington, D.C., puts an embargo in place on lend-lease supplies. And that was a real concern to Churchill.
So at the time of the December 7th, 1941 attack, it was widely expected, in other words, that the U.S. would fight back against the Japanese first and make that their highest priority. Is that correct?
Yes, that was Churchill's fear. And ultimately, that's really the public reaction that Roosevelt bases. On the night of December the 7th, 1941, he has a meeting with his chief aide. He has a meeting with congressional staffers, and almost all the attention of American senators and congressmen is on Japan. Roosevelt's trying to direct attention back to Nazi Germany, but the focus is on Japan, even though that meeting at Placentia Bay that I talked about with the Atlantic Charter, that decision was taken that Germany would be first, but it wasn't necessarily clear that Roosevelt could bring the public with him. And of course, there'd been no indication in the summer of 1941 that the level of destruction that the US Navy would face was going to be on the scale that it faced on December the 7th, 1941.
So for those who aren't familiar with this attack, Professor Sims, why did the Japanese want to attack the Americans to begin with? What had the Americans done to precipitate the attack? And did the Japanese believe by attacking they could win a war against the Americans, or do they just think they could get a better negotiating position when they ultimately came to the negotiating table?
Well, the Japanese position was contradictory because on the one hand, they greatly feared United States industrial power. Their political and military leadership had no confidence whatsoever that they could win even a medium length, certainly not a long lasting war against the United States. Their naval commander, Admiral Yamamoto, famously said, you know, I'll run riot for 6 months perhaps, but then basically we're done for. So you had that on the one hand. On the other hand, they felt they were boxed in by the Americans. The truth is they boxed themselves in through their aggressive campaign in mainland China, in Indochina. And they'd been confronted by an American oil and scrap iron embargo, and also a demand that they withdraw from China. So the Japanese felt in their own minds that they had no choice but to attack the United States and to establish an extended perimeter line in Southeast Asia and in the Pacific. And their idea was not that they would overrun the United States, that they would be able to single-handedly defeat the United States. What they hoped was they would deliver sufficient psychological and political effect through the attack on Pearl Harbor and secure sufficient resources, particularly oil, in Southeast Asia that would enable them to outlast the Americans and the British and to force them into a better negotiating position, as you say.
Was Hitler pleased with the attack on Pearl Harbor? Did he have any clue about it beforehand?
Hitler was absolutely delighted by the attack, and he was relieved. He knew in general terms that some sort of attack was coming. He had absolutely no clue as to the date of the attack. All the sources we have concur that he was surprised by the attack. He was pleased because he thought that this was really the only opportunity he could have to pin down the Americans in the Far East, to divert, as Charlie suggested, lend-lease aid from the Soviet Union, the British Empire, to the Far East, basically to divert America's attention. And in that time, when the Americans were preoccupied in East Asia, he hoped to finish the job in the Soviet Union, perhaps hold off or even push back the British in North Africa, and then in turn to secure a better position for himself.
So at the time that the attack occurred in Pearl Harbor, what was Hitler's highest concern and military objective? Was it finishing the war in Europe, or just keeping the Americans out of the war in Europe?
Well, his overall strategic aim is to balance the Anglo-Americans. His biggest worry is British and American power. That was the reason why he'd gone into the Soviet Union in the first place. First of all, to knock out the Soviet Union as a potential ally to Britain, but secondly, also to secure the living space and the resources necessary, in his view, to secure the German Reich against the Anglo-American global preponderance. So that was his strategic aim. Obviously, on the ground, the biggest commitment of forces is against the Soviet Union. And there, the war was going badly on December the 7th, because on the 5th of December 1941, the Soviet Union had launched a major counterattack in front of Moscow. But what we have to bear in mind is that the sheer extent of that attack didn't really become evident either to Hitler or the German High Command until about 10 days later. So yes, he has a big problem on his hands in Russia, but in strategic terms, he's really focused on the British Empire and on the United States.
So what led Hitler to declare war on the United States when the U.S. had not indicated it was going to engage in a war with the Nazis at the time of the attack?
Well, this is, of course, the really interesting question. And the answer, again, lies in a paradox, because on the one hand, like the Japanese, he's got a huge respect for American industrial power. He is under absolutely no illusions of what the Americans can do once they're fully engaged. On the other hand, he feels, and I stress here, this is in his mind that we're talking about, he feels that the Americans, particularly Roosevelt, are trying to get into the war. He feels that in many important respects, he is actually already at war with the United States. Charlie mentioned the lend-lease arrangements, which of course lead to large-scale supplies to the British. There were the attacks on German submarines in the North Atlantic. The Americans relieve British garrisons in Iceland, for example. Then there's the Atlantic Charter, which Charlie mentioned, in which the United States, which at that point, of course, is not yet belligerent, we're talking the middle of August 1941, is looking forward to the defeat of the German Reich. So from Hitler's point of view, he thinks that Roosevelt is essentially another Wilson. He's just waiting to bring the US into the war at a moment of his choosing. And therefore, he needs to take advantage of the Japanese move to attack the Americans in turn to exploit the opportunity. Because the big thing that he's really worried about is that if he allows the Japanese to go down to defeat in the Far East, then in due course and quite soon, the Americans will refocus again on Europe, and then it will be curtains for him.
So was Hitler's decision to declare war his alone, or did his advisors also think that declaring a war on the United States was a good idea?
The decision was basically his alone. There wasn't a discussion, a debate. Nobody had a meaningful input. Having said that, there was no serious opposition either, certainly not at the level of the principal Nazi leaders, not from the side of Goebbels, the propaganda minister, whom he consulted at length before he gave the landmark speech declaring war on the United States, not from Goering, the commander of the Luftwaffe, not really from the military leaders. There was a certain amount of pushback from the diplomats, particularly those who'd served in the United States. And there was a lot of unease on the military side as to what it actually meant, because everybody knew what the Americans were capable of. But there was no opposition as such.
So what does it really mean to declare war on the United States? The United States is not in Europe. Hitler didn't have the ability to come over to the United States. So what did it really mean to say, I'm declaring war on you, when you're not really engaged in any kind of close contact?
Well, primarily in the immediate term, it meant open warfare in the Atlantic. So it meant open attacks on American shipping in the Atlantic. In fact, the authorization to do that was actually made 2 days before the declaration of war. In fact, on the 9th of December, so 2 days after Pearl Harbor, 2 days before the declaration of war. But you're absolutely right in your question. In practical terms, attacking or fighting the United States was a strange proposition. And this came out in the most stark of ways in the conversation he had with the Japanese ambassador in Berlin, Mr. Oshima. And the transcript of that conversation says, just rather pathetically almost, they have a long discussion about what they might do and all the practical difficulties. And then he says, at the end, the Führer said how he was going to defeat the United States, that he didn't know yet. So for somebody who was so cocksure about everything, even Hitler had to admit he had no idea how to defeat the United States. So his strategy really was psychological and attritional. His only hope was that he could outlast the United States and force them to back off.
The date in which he declared war on the United States was what?
It was the 11th of December, 1941.
Now, in the United States, when we declare war, we have a legislative body that technically does it. Was there a legislative body in Germany that did it, or did Hitler just do it by himself?
Well, he declared war in the German Reichstag, so in the German parliament. But of course, that parliament didn't vote on it. It was simply a talking shop. It was important for rhetorical purposes. So Hitler prepared this speech very carefully. The wording was very carefully chosen. The timing was very carefully chosen. The timing was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Central European time. As he says, quite specifically, the purpose of the timing was to do it at a moment when the Americans were already up in the morning and the Japanese would still be up. So that he was basically addressing the world. And in fact, there were translators there present in all the major world languages. So he announced the war. If you like, he confirmed the war in the German Reichstag, but it wasn't a legislative act. There was no opposition as such. There was just applause.
So what was the U.S. reaction, the British reaction, and the Japanese reaction to the declaration of war by Hitler?
The Japanese were immensely relieved because, as Charlie said, there was a huge amount of uncertainty at the time. It is true that Hitler had told the Japanese that if they attacked the British and the Americans, he would come in. But then, of course, Hitler was famously untruthful. He'd concluded an agreement, to the great shock of the Japanese, with the Soviet Union in August 1939, and had then broken it, again somewhat to the surprise of the Japanese. So the Japanese absolutely did not trust Hitler in that respect. There were many, many voices both before the 7th of December in Tokyo, and indeed between the 7th of December and 11th of December, warning that, you know, Hitler might not declare war. He might use this opportunity to gang up with the British and the Americans against the Japanese. So when he declares war on the 11th of December, there is a collective sigh of relief in Tokyo.
Professor Lederman, why did the Allies make Europe their higher priority rather than Japan? Because the Japanese had attacked the Americans. Politically, wouldn't it have been easier for Roosevelt to say, we're going to go after the Japanese first and I'll get to Europe later?
Yes, that's something where the British, that's part of the sort of concern that the British had had. That's why Churchill was desperate to get to Washington as soon as he gets news of the attack. Partly, as I say, is to ensure the continued flow of Lend-Lease supplies, particularly after that embargo is put in place on the night of December the 7th, 1941. And it has to be remembered that in the days after Pearl Harbor, before Hitler's declaration of war, Churchill's being woken up in the early hours of the morning to be told that supplies are being moved from Europe to East Asia because the United States is in a precarious position there. Britain, of course, is in a precarious position there as well. But the sense was that Germany was the most important and the most dangerous of the potential adversaries. And it's Churchill's visit to Washington at the end of December 1941, where it is confirmed that Germany first is going to be the approach of the Allies. That is something of an issue of controversy in American public opinion throughout 1942. Most opinion polls suggest that, that the majority of the public wants to direct attention against Japan. The Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, says that's the enemy where there's much more visceral hatred because of what happened at Pearl Harbor. And ultimately, there is a sort of a shifting of supplies towards East Asia throughout 1942, just because of the extent of the Japanese running amok throughout East Asia, that there's a need to redistribute supplies. But Roosevelt and George Marshall, they are able to push within the high command for that decision to be taken that Germany is going to be the most important enemy because the decision is taken that once Germany is defeated, then the defeat of Japan is going to be a much more manageable proposition than if it was directed the other way around, with Japan first. And ultimately, that's the decision that wins out in the sort of grand strategy of the war.
So when the situation goes forward, does Roosevelt need to go to Congress to ask for a declaration of war against Germany, or does he just doesn't need to do that?
Well, this is very interesting, because obviously we know in the immediate aftermath of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December the 8th, 1941, Roosevelt comes before Congress, makes his famous Day of Infamy speech. That doesn't happen after Hitler's declaration of war. What Roosevelt asked for is the recognition of a state of war. And he's right to have been cautious about this. And this is what we see in the interim between Pearl Harbor and Germany's declaration of war, because the America First Committee hadn't gone out of business until Germany's declaration of war. They put out a circular in the days after the Japanese attack to say that the arguments against a war in Europe are exactly the same as they had been before the Japanese attack. There's huge amounts of controversy from those non-interventionist senators who say, we've given all of these supplies to the Europeans. Has that left us more vulnerable in East Asia? So Roosevelt is facing a very delicate political situation. So he's, in not coming before Congress, what he's trying to avoid and which non-interventionists are trying to bring about, even after Hitler's declaration of war, is a debate over why that war had come about, but also a debate over strategy, whether it should be Germany first or Japan first. And so Roosevelt, as I say, he puts through a resolution to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a recognition of a state of war. But Roosevelt doesn't come before Congress and berate Hitler in the way that Hitler berates him, as Brendan has mentioned, in the Reichstag.
Professor Sims, now the ultimate question. Had Hitler not declared war on the United States and the U.S. had not engaged in a war in Europe, would the likely outcome of the war in Europe have been much different?
Well, this is something we discuss at some length in the final chapter of the book. And the answer is it would have made a pretty substantial difference because it would have solidified the diversion of Lend-Lease, I think. It would have made it much more difficult for Roosevelt to have pursued the kind of policy he did vis-a-vis Germany. Charlie, how would you enlarge on that?
Yes, I think timing is absolutely critical. And I think the fact that Hitler declares war just a few days afterwards is what's critical here. Because of the situation outside of Moscow, where the Soviet Union is heavily reliant on British tanks, and the situation in the North African desert, where the British are reliant on American planes and tanks, the possibility of a delay in resolving that situation between the United States and Germany, if it had continued to be this period of uncertainty and Lend-Lease had continued to be interrupted for more than a few days, even with the possibility this might have been resolved at some point, it's the timing of Hitler's declaration is absolutely critical, because without that, I think the British would have been in a very dangerous position in the desert. There's a good chance that the Germans would have counter-striked towards the Suez Canal. The Soviets could have been pushed back further into the interior of the country. So the whole situation in Europe would have been fundamentally different just by the timing of Hitler's declaration. And I think it goes back to this question of Lend-Lease, which linked all of these fronts even before the United States came in. But it also needs to be remembered that the American war machine was not at the scale that it would later be. So that Lend-Lease is active, but it's only helping the British and the Soviets through short-term emergencies. And it's really Hitler's declaration of war that brings the United States fully into the conflict in all theatres of operation that allows the United States to build this unmatched war machine that is responsible essentially for the destruction of both of the Axis powers. And so Hitler's decision to declare war in December 1941 solves, as Roosevelt's speechwriter Robert Sherwood would later say, the president's sorest problems.
So a final question, did Hitler ever acknowledge a mistake in declaring war against the United States? Leaders of countries are not generally famous for admitting mistakes to the public, but did Hitler ever even privately acknowledge to his staff that maybe this was a mistake?
No, never. And nor did he do so vis-a-vis attacking the Soviet Union. There's a famous exchange he has with the Finnish leader, Marshall Mannerheim, where he says that, no, things are not going well in Russia, but it just shows how dangerous they were. We should have attacked them earlier. And so his view on the United States was that the America of President Roosevelt was a mortal enemy, that war was inevitable, and it was just a question of when that war would be waged. So paradoxically, even though declaring war on the United States, as you imply, was a catastrophic decision, because of his ideological mindset, he was unable to see that. It simply had a quality of the inevitable to him.
So I've been in discussion today with Brendan Sims and Charlie Lederman on their book, Hitler's American Gamble, Pearl Harbor and Germany's March to Global War. I very much enjoyed reading the book. Thank you both for giving us a terrific conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
On behalf of the New York Historical Society, thank you for joining us for another episode of For the Ages, a History Podcast, hosted by David Rubenstein. We hope you enjoyed it and come back for more. Thanks for your support. You can share your thoughts at public.programs@nyhistory.org.